we are rethinking Finnish music history, because we already have at least two Finnish music history, one written in 1940 and one written in 1995 to 206. The historiography of music in Finland has long been dominated by research paradigm, which lays emphasis on the involvement of a national music culture. The focus of historical research has most often been on the music of Finland, or to shift the emphasis slightly on the history of Finnish music. Instead, we are trying to write history of music in Finland. There's a certain difference in there. This kind of nationalistic tone has been prevalent in all kinds of writing of the history of Finnish music, independent of genres. In other words, be it the historiography of Finnish art music, classical music, folk music, jazz, rock, choral music, military music, or religious music, the point of departure has most often been the Finnishness of the music. Finnish music scholars have taken a point of departure in which an emergence of a particular kind of national music life in Finland at the end of the 19th century is taken for granted. This new phase in Finnish music history has been seen to give rise to the first professional orchestras, the conservatory, patriotic concert repertory, and a genuinely Finnish musical language, highlighted by the national genius, Jean Sibelius in particular.
The most prominent model of explanation in the historiography of Finnish music has been teleology. This means that the past has been looked at from the viewpoint of the present, the outcome of the historical process. In other words, the rise of Finnish music is seen as a necessary and inevitable process, of which the present provides the proof. This spring flooding of the Finnish art music, as Finnish musicologist Toivo Haapanen named the years at the turn of the 20th century, was, according to this essentially Hegelian narrative, caused by the national geniuses, who in turn were moved by a collective Volksgeist, the spirit of the people. National tone is still surprisingly prevalent in many Finnish music history textbooks, encyclopedias, and sometimes even in research literature.
We give you two brief examples of teleological and nationalistic music history writing in Finland. The first example is the so-called birth of Finnish musical language, which took place on April 28, 1892, when symphonic poem Kullero by Jean Sibelius was performed for the first time. So we are being told in many publications, both scientific and popular. We are told that Oscar Merikanto, music critic of the newspaper Päivälehti, summarized the reception of the audience by writing that we recognize these tones as ours, even if we have never heard them before. Well, in fact, Merikanto wrote and published those words before the first performance, on the day of the performance. So the audience would read this Merikanto's words. So they couldn't summarize the reception. But instead, they led people to hear Kullervo as Finnish. Merikanto's article was one among many similar writings which were published before the performance. And according to various writings in the newspapers after the performance, the audience really could hear birds singing and on summer day, and trees humming in the forest, echo answering from cliffs, and Sefert blowing his horn, and people singing folk songs. But how could they know that the birds, the trees, the forest, the Sefert and the folk songs in Kullervo are Finnish? What makes them Finnish and birds, trees, forest, Seferts and folk songs in works by foreign composers not? I think the most important reason is that the audience knew before the performance what they were going to hear. That they were going to hear Finnish birds and forests and so on. And so thanks to Oscar Berg and others. Well, anyway, a nation needs national symbols and national myths and stories. One of the most important stories in nation building are the founding stories, how something national got started. Merikanto wrote after the concert the next day that Kullervo is the first genuinely Finnish musical work. The founding story of Finnish musical language has since been retold many times in different contexts. For example, in an 8-volume History of Finnish Music, which was published between 1995 and 2006, the case is made perfectly clear. The title of the chapter is Sibelius Finds Finnish Dog. The subtitle is The Birth of Finnish Art of Music. Another subtitle, Kullervo, which begins. The Finnish art of music was born on April 28, 1892. Sibelius' symphonic poem, Kullervo, for solo voices, choir and orchestra, was premiered in the festival hall of the University of Helsinki.
Philological attitude dominates many narratives concerning the development of musical life in 19th century Finland. First, in nearly all narratives, local musical life in the 19th century, and especially the period before the year 1882, is seen as inferior, poor, and backward, compared to later achievements and present times. However, according to this view, in the 1880s, due to the founding of Robert Kajanus' orchestra and the Music Academy in the 1882, Finnish music life already was, so to say, on the track. This master narrative quite often stresses the role of the Finnish musical heroes, most of all, of course, Kajanus, Sibelius, and Martin Vegelius. A fantastic example of teleology in Finnish music history can be found in the history of the Helsinki Philharmonic Orchestra by Einari Marvia and Matti Vainio some 20 years ago. When describing the development of Helsinki concert life from the 1870s onwards, Marvia writes,
Although Helsinki had already quite many-sidedly experienced preliminary samples of European art music, musical civilization in Helsinki was still at early stages. One can even say that there were still unnumbered musical experiences and several masterworks just waiting for their turn before Helsinki was to pass through to the main part of world music literature and accordingly, at least this way, to come up with European music centers.
There are several viewpoints that theological explanation usually tends to hide or totally to forget. This can also be seen in Marvia's text. He takes music history for granted. For him, the past and present are similar musical words. And he does not see this 19th century musical life as foreign culture at all. In my opinion, we cannot explain the past from the perspective of our own experiences. Furthermore, we cannot take the attitudes, feelings, and musical meanings of 19th century concert audiences for granted. Every generation has its own experiences, and accordingly, Helsinki, or musical life in Helsinki, is not, were not, an active historical subject. Individuals are active, not towns.
The greatest theoretical and methodological challenge in our project is to tackle the difficulty of writing non-teleological national history. Taken broadly, teleological explanation models cannot be totally avoided, we think so, when looking at the past from the viewpoint of the present. However, we try to avoid teleology through micro-historical research, through counterfactual history, through the decanonization, and through transnational perspective.
Okay, first. The first methodological starting point by which we try to avoid teleology is micro-history. We try to penetrate into grassroots level and investigate what the people themselves thought they were doing. We try to assess their actions from their own viewpoint and not from our viewpoint. Because, of course, we know what happened later and what were the consequences of their actions, but the actors themselves didn't know it. But of course, micro level has to be seen in constant interaction with the micro level. Macro level. These two should not be seen as opposites to one another, but rather as dimensions on the continuum of reality.
Another juristic method to avoid teleological fallacy is to probe counterfactual historical processes. We are not writing actual counterfactual history as it often is done, but we are rather mapping out the possibilities available for our subjects at a given time. What if questions help us to conceptualize and outline the various possibilities that the historical agents had available for them. What if, for instance, if Finnish musicians would have gone to St. Petersburg to study instead of Leipzig or Berlin? What impact would that have had on Finnish music life? Why did this nevertheless not happen? Counterfactual reasoning is not only funny but also useful. It helps us to understand better how the things happen and what kind of options were available in its historical moments.
Sean.
Sure. This is it.
Is it? Formation of musical genre, as we see it, is related to the formation of the canon. Genre itself is often defined through its agents. Classical music, for instance, was in the 19th century defined as the music composed by Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. Very often, canon serves as an aesthetic yardstick for all music. It sets the standards of great music. In our project, we look at this process of canon and genre formation in the 19th century Finland, and look for its transnational affiliations. We are interested in how social and aesthetic distinctions between serious and light music came into existence what were the continental ideas related to the divide, and what the contribution of networks of individual agents was in this process. Furthermore, we will discuss the affiliation of other genres like church and military music to this divide. Good research material for this can be found in contemporary newspaper criticism, concert programs and liner notes, and early musicological research in Finland.
One of the most powerful metaphors of nationalism has been the metaphor of awakening. According to this metaphor, a nation which once was conscious of its own peculiarity and had its own identity has fallen asleep but wakes up in the 19th century. Instead of renewing this metaphor, which emphasizes the independence of the national movements and the indigenous reasons for national sentiments, we stress transnationalism. As we all know, nationalism has been one of the most transnational movements in the world from the 19th century onwards. In our view, the formation of the national music life in Finland was a transnational process in which the styles, institutions, conventions and practices of Western classical and popular music and Eastern also, and Southern, were transferred to music culture in Finland. This process entails a sort of translation of the patterns, ideals and values of the 19th century music life of the continental Europe, German in particular, into the existing cultural frames in Finland. We are interested in the networks by which music, musicians, musical ideas, etc. moved from one part of the world to the other and adapted to the local conditions.
Finnish historian Matti Klingen has really got the point when describing the foundations of history writing. Klingen states, "It is believed that history begins from the past, although it actually begins from us, from our need for the past, from our questions." This perspective sweeps all kinds of historiography, of course, but I argue that it especially helps us to understand the background of nationalist music history. This history was constructed from the need of national ideology, and so it always began from the present. And accordingly, it was always based on nationalist need for the musical past. Secondly, in this model of music history writing, national music culture was seen more as the isolated continuum of local art music than as part of pan-European cultural development. Okay, our own need for the past is rather opposite. We see history of music in Finland as a transnational process, but also including cosmopolitan nationalism. Thank you, Kai.
Thank you for this Finnish perspective. And please, comments, questions.
Thank you. Two very different things. Sorry first for being like a schoolmaster, but there is no element like theological. It's theological without H. What do you mean? Check your dictionary, please. The second thing is, I'm also dealing with a Finnish tone, let's say that way. And of course, it's very laudable if you want to come away from this national niche in which Finnish music is still, I think, also put in other parts of the world. I want to say contemporary composers are often compared to Sibelius, no matter what music they really write. I mean, they I don't know, Sibelius is so dominating still outside of Finland. And that's my point I want to come to. I mean, it's good to argue that the canon is meaningful in that way that it is, but it's still, I think, giving structure to the musical life. And a composer like Rautavaara, for instance, regards himself to be part of this Finnish tone tradition, if I may put it that way. So it's, in some way, it's a fact. I mean, I understand that you are a skeptic towards Merikanto's statement, but I think it shows how people listen to this music nonetheless. That's my opinion. I want to.
Yes, one comment. I think this term decanonization, it's an unhappy word, because we don't want to destroy the canons. We want to research how they came, how they evolved. And of course, the canons are strict historical facts. We can't deny that. We don't want to deny that.
And we are sure that after our writings, we have new canon.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I'm glad that you came here, that we are able to carry on this exchange of ideas here. The role of Sibelius and so I think we don't have so many. We shouldn't really blame the Finnish historians for these problems that we are encountering. Rather, I think we should admit that there were too few of them. So not enough research has been carried out. There's new interest. It is quite obvious that the fact that we, the Finns, would have such a prominent 20th century composer like Sibelius, so I think it's really obvious that it has created some problems in our emphasis. Points of emphasis in our research, but I want to say that the worst problem would be that today we would assume these teleological ideas. Rather, I would say that the fact that there was so much research on Sibelius, so it has really overshadowed other interesting important points. So we don't. That's really one of the reasons why we don't have so much of history, because we have this important individual. On the other hand, I want to mention that also research on Sibelius has also underwent very important paradigm shifts. Like, for instance, there was a time when it was really impossible to speak about nationalism in Sibelius's case. So he was being presented as the forerunner of European modernism. But these music scholars have worked, Sibelius scholars also have worked on these questions quite a bit, and rather I think we need research on other composers and other musical phenomena. Two smaller remarks considering the way the Finnish audience experienced the first performance of Kullervo, Sibelius's Kullervo. So of course there were these ideas of nationalism in the air. There was the ideas of the Finnish landscape. We didn't have much of a national history, so there was in the Finnish symbols where we gave the landscape. So people imagined these things from what they read in Topelius's the book of and paintings also. So these images were already there. It was really, and there was a social demand, so to say, on this end. And then, one thing I wanted to intervene. Only said that Finnish music student didn't go to St. Petersburg to study. That's not true. Many did go, and most of them were performing musicians, but they were some composers.
Yes, some went, but most of them went to Leipzig and Berlin.
Yes, the situation was quite different from our, because in Estonian music history, almost everybody studied in St. Petersburg in some period, in the late 19th century. Yeah, Martin, please.
Thank you very much. Is it right now?
No, right, you're not somewhere. Please, not.
Later.
Thank you very much for your reflections. I fully agree with that. I have one question. You mentioned that history starts from the past. And on the other hand, you mentioned we have our own need for history. And our own need in writing history, and so we think from the present. your father mentioned that is we don't have to that we don't want to go in the trap that we don't know the attitudes of the former persons. How will you going to manage this problem? It seems to be a little bit like an apology of history in general.
Have you an idea? Actually, how I understand this methodological problem, it should be combined. So you cannot say that we don't start from the present at all, because it's silly to say, because we have now, and we are writing the modern people in present times, so we have to start also from here, but not only. So this combined, you also have to go to understand this past, the past, but to not only do from this point of view and from this point of view, but both. This is maybe my should be what it at best history writing should contain.
Thank you. And the last, question.
Thank you for your presentation. Interesting ideas. But one question, maybe naive question. Your designation, cosmopolitan nationalism. What is this? Controversial terms, cosmopolitan and nationalism.
Well, I would appreciate it if you would ask, because you have written a lot about this thing.
No, it's just that I don't see this as a contradiction. I think nationalism, I know, of course, that it is concerned or appears to be concerned with competitively elevating the interests of a particular nation. But actually, if you look at musical nationalism in the 19th century, it's a broadly middle-class movement that is common to a whole suite of Europe. The aesthetic center of it is a common center, which is just inflected a little bit by different. And I think, actually, it comes back to the point about Sibelius. I think in some ways we could be making more of a problem here than actually exists. You know, if you take Dahlhaus's very simple presentation that nationalism is not a category of musical materials, it's a category of reception. And very close parallel to Sibelius in England would be someone like Eldar, whose musical language is transparently derived from Austro-German models. But at a certain point, it was necessary for us to have a great English composer, and Elgar becomes that figure, which is exactly what you were describing with the beginning of Sibelius, that first article.
Now that you mentioned Dahlhaus, I have to add that Dahlhaus was thinking about in his Foundations of Music History, should we take as our object of study the musical work or musical event? And Dahlhaus thought that the musical work should be the proper object of music history. And we think that music event is much more. Well, it's another way of seeing things. But I would rather speak of musical action. To write a symphony is musical action. To perform it is musical action. To write a critique of it is musical action. To print it, make a score of it is musical action. And to buy it, to score is musical action.
I mean, Dahlhaus had his own kinds of agendas, and particularly a kind of, at that time, an anti-vulgar Marxist agenda, where he was very much trying to assert the idea that ideas, including compositions, can shape the world, as opposed to everything being generated from beneath. You know, he had his own kind of, there's no neutrality in